Hi, and welcome to another edition of 20 Minutes of Teaching Brilliance on the Road with Trust-Based Observations. Today I have with me Tiffany Gettle, and I watched Tiffany in early December, I think, when I was out doing the Crookston Diocese in rural northern Minnesota. And so, Tiffany, how about you give us a little background on you, and we'll take it from there.
I am married and have four kids. This is my 13th year teaching. I started out in a private school in Fargo and taught fourth grade for 2 years. And then I went to public school and taught 8 years in second grade there and then 1 year in fourth. And then moved back to private school and taught fifth grade there last year and then moved back to second grade this year. So.
Which you like.
Which I love. Yes, I am back to my stomping grounds. So.
And all the other experiences are great, though, too, right? I mean, you learn a lot.
They were. I've loved
all the other levels, right?
Yep, I've loved all the grades. I can just tell that second's kind of where my jam is.
I hear you. We all have our one that we it's the one we like the most. I totally get it. Well, listen, the day we were in there, we were watching math class, and it was so. Like for me, the ultimate measure is what? 20 minutes are up? How did that happen? And it was definitely one of those days. And so when we started, they were doing the century game. So why don't you just start talking a little bit about that lesson and that, and then we'll move on to the stick flash and all the other good stuff that we saw going on.
The century game is a game that is from the Bridges math curriculum. And they count by tens and it starts out to 100 when we're at the 10th day of school, because that's the first century. And then we just continue moving on. So the 20th day of school is the 200th century, or the second century day. And so we continue moving on. And so now we've hit the 10th century day. So we're up to 1,000 now, but it's counting by tens in a circle, one at a time, just kind of a whip around. And then as the year goes on, we kind of move. Now we're counting forward and backwards by tens. That's a little added thing that I've added to it a little bit, and counting on and off the decimal, off the 10. So starting at 12 instead of 10 and things like that. Just another version of it.
Do you mean like 12, 22, 32, like that?
Yes. Yep. Right.
And you're just pushing your scaffolding and making it tougher and more challenging for them. And definitely on the carpet and the circles, and they all know what's going on. And it's a little, I mean, I know there's some pairings that you're doing on purpose, but there's some randomness to where you start. So you can't just count on knowing the same thing every day. They've got for sure. Well, that was the start. It was fun to watch the kids get into that at first. But I think if we dig into it even more, why don't you talk about the stick flash and what you're doing in that and the use of the whiteboards and all that, because the kids were so into it. And it's always such a telltale sign to me is when they're into it.
Yep. Stick flash is also was a lesson from the Bridges curriculum. And we have, so you start out with popsicle sticks and showing them like two bundles and three ones and have them share what it is.
Bundles of 10, right?
Bundles of 10. Yes, sorry. Yeah. Bundles of 10. And then they share what it is. And then as we move forward a little bit, we start to cover it up. So we cover the sticks and bundles up and I flash it. So I take a piece of felt and I cover it up and then I show it to them and then I cover it up again. So then they're just briefly seeing it, have to remember, and can try and hold that number. After we get familiar with that a little bit, we add in another.
Just for the audience, just a little bit. So what we're talking about is you've got popsicle sticks, rubber banded, if I remember right, or something, in groups of tens, and you've got singles. And so they're on the pile, and they're not even necessarily neatly placed in order of each other. They can be kind of, if I remember right, even kind of disorganized in the way. Am I right on that?
Yes. So. Yeah. I will start with having them organized into tens and ones. And then as we move forward a little bit, I do move them around so they can't have that structure.
Predict more.
Balance them.
Be able to react in the moment, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going with that. Sorry. I just wanted to make sure everybody listening knew what we're talking about.
Yep. So after we move to or have done the just one number, then we start to move to two numbers. So I might cover up, have the sticks and bundles, and then cover them up with felt, and then show another number, and then, but keep that shown. So show another set of sticks and bundles. So
Tiffany, I'm going to back us up just a hair. So
yeah,
show them just for, I just want to make, because we know what we're seeing, but they didn't see it, right? So
so
every kid in the class has a whiteboard, right? And you're all on the carpet. And so the first round, you show the numbers real quickly, and then they write the numbers on the whiteboard. Is that what it was? Or do they talk about? Remind me.
So the first round, when I'm just showing the sticks and bundles, I have them write it on their whiteboard. So that way they're still engaged with it. And I can quickly glance around who's got it. And once I see that everybody's kind of has it and is understanding, okay, yeah, they can see the sticks. They know how many it is. Then we cover it up and then flash them and show, okay, so here's the sticks, cover it up, show them. And then I have them write it on their whiteboards again. So then I can see, okay, who's ready to add in that next number. And then we had been previously working on addition strategies and hopping by tens and counting by tens. Like, so if it's 23, adding 20, we talked about going 23, 33, 43. So then when we bring the sticks and bundles into it, it gives them a visual. So now so we have 23 hidden underneath the piece of felt, and I'm going to add in 20 more to show them the two bundles, and they can then see, okay, 23, I have to hold it because it's covered up. I can't count those again. So now I have 23 and I know, okay, 33, 43 with those bundles, and then putting it together and showing, okay, what addition sentence did we just do? So then I might have them write down, okay, 23 plus 20 equals 43. And then that can show me that they're seeing the addition piece of it, and they're not just counting sticks. And then we continue to move forward, where I might then show 30.
Can I pause you, Tiffany? What? Just to kind of, so holding it, you mean remember it, just for people listening at home. And then, so basically they write the number down, but then afterwards you ask them to basically show their work for how they solve it for the strategy that works best for them on their whiteboards as well. And then I think it's a combination, remind me if I'm wrong, a combination of them showing the whiteboards, but then also having some kids volunteer, or you pick out so everyone gets a chance to share out their strategies as well. Was that right?
Yes. So when they put it on their whiteboards, instead of me just having one person call out and share what their answer was, I'll do a turn and talk. So I'll say, okay, turn and tell your partner what the answer is, or what numbers did you see? And then they'll tell them. And then it's also, how did you figure that out? Not just the answer is 43. It's 43 because 23 plus 10 is 33, plus 10 more is 43. And then on their boards, with what we'd been doing in the past, they would then show it on an open number line. So they're starting at 23, and then they have a hop of 10, and then show their land at 33, and then another hop of 10 and show their land at 43.
And just to be clear on that, it's like sometimes a turn and talk, one kid can do all the talking, but the way you've got it set up in there, it's really more than a turn and talk. It's more like a Kagan structure to me, where every kid's getting an equal opportunity to talk and making sure that both kids are having a chance to talk and share their work, not just one kid. So they're both learning from each other. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, we practice turn and talks from day one. So we don't just do them in math, but we do them across the board. So we have learned that you share and then your partner shares. And then sometimes, because there's always kids that like to share first, I'll say, okay, if you shared first last time, you have to wait and the next person shares, to make sure to challenge those kids who are a little bit more nervous to share, or maybe don't get it super quick, that they now have to share and they have to listen to each other. And if someone doesn't get it, it's the opportunity for that student who does understand it to teach them. I have them paired strategically, where I have usually a higher student with like a middle student, and then a middle student with maybe a lower student that struggles a little bit more. So that way they're still close in ability, but they can teach each other. Because sometimes a really high student might just say, well, it's 43 because it is. And then it's the student who's still trying to figure it out is going, I have no idea how you got that, but I believe you because you're good at math. So it's...
Tiffany, can I jump in again? Because I know you guys haven't had that cooperative learning training yet, but you're already doing it because you just intuitively or experientially, you know that if I pair that high student with the low student, that's where you're going to get the most frustration. And we want teaching others by design because that's the most powerful form of retention of learning. But if that gap is too big, the frustration from either party, the high or the low, can get in the way of that learning. So because of the way you strategically group them, that learning, that teaching others can still happen, but not in a way where that frustration happens. Am I right?
Yes, very much so.
No, it's just so important when that happens because it is giving that. And the other thing is, like, if you think about it, like if you had to get through all 20 some kids that you had in the class and then they're getting corrected, so they're getting the right answer so much quicker.
Yeah.
Than you can get to them, right? So
yep.
I just love that about that.
Well, and I just love that they all are sharing then, because if you just have someone raise your hand, you get the same kids that raise their hand and they share out and the rest of the kids tune out. So if you do that, then
because I didn't get called on.
And so then I've even done where they share and then I will say, okay, you two tell me about it. And so they're not necessarily raising their hand, but it's also not a cold call because they've already talked about the answer together. And it's not this one person has to share. It's what did you two come up with together? And when I do that, I usually know if they have the right answer or not, because I kind of go around, I listen in when they're doing the turn and talks. I try to walk around and listen. Okay, who's got it? Who's still struggling with it? Are we ready to move on? What needs to be scaffolded for as I continue the lesson?
You're checking for understanding on every single problem. So you're setting kids up for success when you know they've got the right answer, right? Or teams up for success. And especially if you know there's that struggling team, it's like, oh, they've got it this time. Like, I'm going to call on them, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to build that success for them totally. Spencer Kagan, who's the Kagan guy, my favorite quote of his is, why ask a question and have one student give an answer when you can ask a question and have every student give an answer, right? Just the engagement is so much different. And when you've got the whiteboards, one, every kid's getting the answer by themselves. They might get it right or wrong, but then you've got them paired too. So afterwards, they're doing it together. There's a four-person activity called Numbered Heads Together, and really you're doing a two-person version of that. But it's ensuring that every time they're getting it right. It's just, it would, and they're having so much fun while they're doing it, right? They're so animated. And then you're watching every single time, and you've taught them how to socially interact with each other. So,
yep. And I've got a really good group this year, and they love school. And so the passion there for when they are working together and they're getting along with each other and they kind of challenge each other. And so that's been really fun to see how they work together in those pairs.
Tiffany, let's be honest. That, I mean, sure, we can say some classes are more naturally stronger than others in terms of the way they get along, but that never just happens by itself. Right? I mean, you still have to do things at the beginning of the year. Like you said, you started turning talks in all your subjects at the beginning of the year, and you're socializing them to the right way to do it, right?
Yes, it does have to be taught because otherwise it's mass gas.
Right. What do you want to go into, maybe like what you do at the beginning of the year? Because I think that matters.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the year, depending on, I mean, it can be anything. It can just be sharing something. It can be
oftentimes it's better when it's non-content stuff.
Yes, and it doesn't have to be something difficult. It can just be turn and tell your partner your favorite color, and then switch.
What I did over the weekend.
So yeah, we just start out with that, and sometimes I bring it a little bit more specific where I say like teach, and that brings in a little bit of the whole brain classroom when there's more signals with that.
Tell me more about that. Tell
What
me
was
more
that?
about that.
So a whole brain is just kind of, it's a management piece that I've taken the class on, and it's just kind of has that interaction back and forth. So there's a lot of hand signals. There's a lot of just the responses back and forth with the students. I do pieces of it. I don't do it fully like some teachers do, and they do it very well and it's great, but I just use some pieces of it. And then the turn and talks I've learned through trainings that I got at a past school that I was at. The Steve Dunn writing program is based off of a lot of the turn and talks and all of those things, writing and reading programs. So that's where I've kind of learned how to do it. And it's, yeah, you have to start out day one right away when you're teaching all your routines and everything like that, how to, you know, walk from one end of the classroom to the other. It's everything has to be taught, because if they haven't done it before, it's, they're just going to think it's time to talk, have, you know, socialization hour during the middle of a lesson. So yeah, we start small. And like I said, I have different partners for different subjects too. We kind of start out with the same spots, but like now as you move through the classroom or move through this school year, we have very like specific reading. They have specific partners. Writing, they have specific partners.
Yeah, it's not universal. That grouping doesn't stick with us, because we're kids in one subject, and we can get sometimes caught in that loop of thinking it's the same for everything.
Yeah.
And then do you mix them up periodically too? Because after a while, it's good just to...
Yes, I try to switch them up. Sometimes I forget, and then they're with them longer than others. But it helps when their reading partner is different from their writing partner. That's different from their math partner, because then it's not always the same one. And so that does help with it. But I do try to switch it up too, because sometimes there are groups that you find somebody's getting frustrated because one is having a harder time focusing, or one is higher, or one is lower, and they just, you know, they just have, maybe don't click as well. And so then, or they click really well and they talk about everything. And so then we have to switch because of the distraction level.
Which is also just saying I have to differentiate. I can do my best to arrange it, but sometimes I'm not going to get it right. And then I have to make an adjustment. And even if that's separating a group that's functioning well together, but to get two groups that work better together than one that doesn't, one that doesn't, that's what you do for successful teaching, right?
Yep. Yep.
Why don't we go back a little bit more? Because I know we got a little bit off topic talking on all these other things, but talk more about the stick flash and then how that builds and how this, because the strategy piece is really interesting as they're talking that out and sharing that out, because you had multiple strategies, at least two, if not three, that the kids had developed over time. And so why don't you go just continue a little bit more with the sticks as that's building? Because I think that especially the speed thing with the covering the numbers up and then having to remember the one, and then just like the scaffolding of that and the focus that it requires for 7-year-olds, right? Seven turning into 8-year-olds to remember that. Like, I just think it was so impressive. So, you know, I cut you off to go on a little detour, but let's come back to that more.
Yeah. So once we get to what the goal of the lesson is, the 2-digit by 2-digit addition. So instead of just showing kids numbers, bare numbers, what we would call them, 25 plus 17, and then having them solve that, they won't use a mental strategy. They might go to an algorithm or something like that. So we're trying to teach them to add without using an algorithm and using a mental strategy. So when I have the sticks and bundles, and you start by showing them one number and then you add in another number, then you have to scaffold it, because they're not always going to have popsicle sticks in front of them to add. So when you cover it up, it's starting to get them to that bare number, to just kind of understanding what that 25 is. And so they can visualize it, 2 tens and 5 ones, and hold it. So when they cover it up, they have to hold it. And then you add in, you know, and you might even start with 7, 25 plus 7. So you show 7 sticks. And if they can then kind of think, okay, 25, if I take 5 more of those sticks where I can't see the 25 anymore, but she's showing me the 7. So I think, okay, 5 more is going to make another 10. So then I'm at 30, and then I have 2 left. Now I'm at 32. So they're doing that mentally. But then when on their whiteboards, the purpose of those is to show it on an open number line or to show that strategy of, okay, so I started at 25, I added 5 to get to 30. Now I'm adding 2 more to get to 32, and they show it with their hops on a number line.
They're basically showing you their mental math.
Yes. This all like came from training when I, that it's part of the Bridges math program, but it also is math recovery training, the math recovery council that I've had to help me understand more the why and why this is so important for kids. And so then once you get to covering them both up, now they're having to hold both numbers. So maybe I did 25 plus 7 where they could see it. And then I do 25 and I add and I do 17. So now they figured out before 25 plus 7 was 32. Now it's 17. Well, that's just one more 10. So then I hop 10 more. And so that kind of helps the progression of some of those numbers as you're covering them up. Yeah. And then when they're both covered up and you start to add in more numbers, you can also, some kids won't make those jumps like that. Sometimes they'll split the strategy. So they might see, okay, I had 32 underneath the first one. I saw it. Okay, I covered it up. I know there's 32. Now I'm going to show 25 and cover that up. And then they might go, okay, well, there was 3 10s, there was 2 10s, now there's 5 10s, 5 1s and 2 1s, and they split it into 10s and into 1s. And then they can show that on the open number line too, or if there's another way that they want to show it on their whiteboard. But it's two different strategies that these sticks and bundles kind of present with them. It guides them to a strategy without making them, telling them how to do it. Because if they figure it out on their own, they're going to remember how to do it. So that's kind of the goal of that. And then as you're doing that, where you cover them up, like if you're covering up the second number two, some kids can't always hold both numbers. And so I try to glance around and see, okay, she needed to see that longer. So then some kids have moved on to showing their work, but I can tell some aren't ready. So then I'll say, okay, I'm going to show it again. Because when I cover them, the sticks and bundles up, I don't show it to them for 5 minutes and then cover it up. They get like 30 seconds or less sometimes. It's a very brief.
It's been way less. It's really quick. I thought it was like a flash.
So, I mean, it's quick. It's really quick. Because yeah. I don't want them counting them by ones. The whole goal is that they can go, oh, there were 3 10s and 2 1s. That's 32. Where if they see it too long, they're going to go 10, 20, 30, 31, 32 right. every time.
Right.
Just because it's in front of them. Where if they have to hold it, then they can visualize that. And it is really hard for some kids. So then, you know, you have to pull it back and you have to, those kids, they need to see it more before it's covered up.
But I think a couple of things you're doing really help with that. One, every kid has a whiteboard, but two, they're all on the carpet really close to you. And so, because like if you're in a classroom and they're sitting at their desks, whether they're in groupings or whatever your grouping is, like for you to work your way around and see that, that takes way more time because you're right there and the kids are on the floor and they've all got their whiteboards and you're doing those constant checks for understanding. You like instantly know, oh, I need to give a second showing for those that need it, right? Where in a different setting, that wouldn't work nearly as well.
Yeah, we hadn't done a lot of the math circle. But when we were doing this, but I was trying to think, how am I going to show them these sticks and bundles so they can see them? Because I knew it wasn't going to work on the board on a document camera because it just doesn't work as well. I've done it before. It doesn't work as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
when they're all literally peering in because it's like 2 feet in front of them.
Yeah.
It pulls them into it way more, doesn't it?
Yes. And I have found like they love when we go to the math circle spots. So you can just tell that like they must be able to see a lot better and they must just feel more unity or something because they love it when I say they're like math circle spots, like instead of facing me or whatever, because we're always at the carpet usually for lessons, but it's, you know, it's different. I think they just like the circle.
Oh, there's an energy there that pulls in. And I think when they're all deciding together and doing those turn and talks and explaining, they have so much passion behind sharing their strategy. Like you've built that in where they're super excited to share their strategy. So you can just see how then that energy builds upon itself. So now it's a new one. We all get to look, and that's what they're like. I mean, it's joyful to watch for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
I was going to say, let's do one more thing. I think we got a pretty good idea on the math. One of the things I know, because we had a pre-chat, and one of the things that we talked about that I think is really, really important is you talked about your mentor math teacher along the way, and your I forget which job it was, one of your previous jobs you had, though, that person that was like, that really, really influenced what you've become and done with math. And just, do you want to talk about that a little bit and the influence of that and for anybody else out there, especially that's a younger teacher, the importance of, you know,
yes,
finding those people?
It was our math coordinator at the public school that I was at previously. And I was on the math committee. And it was every time we had a math committee meeting, which I'm sure lots of teachers are like, oh, another committee meeting. It was like we all got a lesson on how to teach math every single time we had a math committee meeting, because she always started out with something like that. And her passion for math just totally set tone with me, because she loved it. And it just was like, this is why kids don't understand math, or this is how you can get them to love it, or how you can really break it down for them, and why we don't just do the algorithm. You know, there's a lot with that right now, is why don't we just go back to how we learned it when we were kids and everything? And there's very good reasoning for it, because this isn't how I learned how to do math. It's how I learned how to teach math. And the way
that... Can I share a little secret? I was at the school last week. No one knows what we filmed this, so I can say it. And I saw a class, it was a math class, and it was like when I went to high school and why I stopped liking math, because he just started doing problems on the board. Okay, everybody got it? Next problem, never really checking in with us, and we're copying the problems. But there was no sense of why. And I just like, I was really good at math, and I was just like, I just lost all my passion for it because it wasn't fun and nobody explained it anymore. So you're talking about the why and the passion and all that, and it makes a difference.
Yeah, and she trained for, so I have my math recovery training, and she was actually our trainer for it. Like, she got trained to be a trainer, and it was phenomenal. What I learned from those, you know, I'm sure every trainer is amazing, but I can't imagine there being a better one, because she just made it make so much sense. And I think that just... Yeah, I mean, I loved being on the math committee, and I think people thought I was crazy because I was the one who was like, I moved to fourth grade and was like, but I still get to be on math committee, right? And they were like, sure, you can be on math committee. Yes, I mean, I think they did. Like, you're crazy. So people always laugh. Like, if they get me talking about math, they're going to be there all day when it comes to this.
Tiffany, have you with that, the math recovery program and that mentor, like, have you, do you feel like you're playing it forward? Like at your new school, it's not your brand new school, but there, like, are you working on showing and sharing? Cause we haven't really had a chance to talk about that with your peers.
Yeah. I mean, I try, you know, a little bit here when we have a new math curriculum. And so I've tried to build it up a little bit, because it is based off of a lot of that, kind of those pieces on the why, the conceptual why we do this. And it's a hard transition when you've taught a different curriculum for, you know, a long time to know, okay, well, this seems like a lot more work in a way, because it is.
First,
and if you don't know why you're doing it, then it's kind of like, it doesn't make sense. Sure. And so my hope is that we'll be able to get that like AVMR training for everyone in our school, because I think the curriculum itself would just make more sense. And, this is why we're doing it. And I know that teachers who have started this new program are seeing like, whoa, the kids really, they get it. they enjoy it. And
Great.
so it's a transition. So I was really excited when I heard our school was going to be doing this math program, because I piloted it in the public school that I was at previously. Okay. And so I was super excited when I heard that they were doing it, they were going to adopt it here. So.
Sure. Well, Tiffany, we're nearing the end. One of the things that I always ask our guests, if they're willing to do it, is in case anybody that's listening in has any questions and wanted to reach out and learn a little bit more about what you're doing with math, and we'll have the names of the programs in the show notes that you were talking about. But would you mind sharing a contact information for anybody that might want to reach out?
Yeah, I'd be more than, yeah, that's totally fine.
Sure.
So you can email me. I don't know if I can use my school email.
it's been okay in the past.
Okay. So T Gettle, Goettle, at St. Joe's Moorhead School.com. So
T Gettle, Goettle.
Yep.
And at St. Joe's Moorhead School.com.
Yes. And sorry, Moorhead is just MHD.
Oh. So yep. St. Joe's MHD, that's good.
Yeah, sorry about MHD. That.
MHD.com. Yep. Okay, good, that's good. Okay, Tiffany, thanks so much for spending time with me today and sharing your 20 minutes of teaching brilliance with everybody else out there.
Yep. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.